Let's get on with the show. Our topic today kind of has the opening question, is there really such a thing as military intellectual entrepreneurialism? Not the commercial type, but the intellectual type. More than almost anything, when you look at how it's structured, the Defense Department and the military in general, it's pretty large in the last decade. It's become pretty sated. And those type of organizations that are large, sated, and complacent don't really have a great history either in the military world or in the commercial world of being able to prepare for what is next. What you really want to try to do, and what a lot of very successful companies have done, even large ones, is try to nurture a culture that supports a type of creative friction that we've talked about before, to maintain that attitude of somebody who is small, hungry, and is driven by that creative destruction that ultimately tries to not just accept where they are, but tries to move an organization towards a path that's more successful and efficient and able to meet the challenges that it's set up to do. And the question we want to talk about today is, do we have that attitude in the military right now? And if not, how do we build it? If we have a kernel or a small source of that type of attitude, how do we encourage it? How do we grow it? How do we imbue other people with that similar attitude? And to build a mindset that better prepares our country in a time of challenge towards the national security requirements that we all get paid for. And as we go into a lot of discussions about budget constraint, that's a time of challenge. And a common theme that we talk about here is how it's not something that's worthy of gnashing teeth, rending of clothes, and wearing of hair shirts. Is other times that our country's military has found itself in a financially constrained environment, it's been an opportunity to innovate. It's been an opportunity to really have to prioritize, not just from a mechanical point of view, from a inventory point of view, but also from an intellectual point of view. What is really important? Where do we need to put those resources towards? And who are the right people that should be having that conversation? Well, we're going to touch on that and a lot of things today with a little bit of a different structure than we usually have on MidRats. We're still here for an hour, and we may go a little bit over. So, again, for those that are with us live, and if it dies right at 60 minutes, it keeps recording. Just go over to the archive, grab it, and you can catch in with what you missed. But we're going to have something that we do a few times a year, a panel discussion. And the panel discussion today are going to be with four people who have kind of helped lead to something that I think is going to be very, very interesting. And if everybody, if you're online right now, if you go to DEF2013, that's Delta Echo Foxtrot 2013.com, that is the website for the Defense Entrepreneurs Forum that's going to be held up in Chicago from the 12th through the 14th of October. And all of our panel members are one way or another connected to it. We have Lieutenant Ben Coleman, United States Navy. He is the founder of Disruptive Thinkers. He's also an F-18 pilot and a member of the CNO's Rapid Innovation Cell, co-founder of the Defense Entrepreneurs Forum. We also have Captain Anthony Hatala, U.S. Marine Corps. He's an AV-8B pilot. He's also played around with the C-130 Harvest Hawk. He's a founder of Military Traveler and co-founder of the Defense Entrepreneurs Forum. And branching out to our non-maritime services, we have Major Nathan Finley, United States Army. He is an armor officer and also U.S. Army Harvard Strategy Fellow, co-founder and executive director of the Foundation for Strategy Development. And last but not least, Captain Jeff Gilmore, United States Air Force. He's a C-17 pilot and co-founder of Military Lounge. Gentlemen, welcome to MidRats.
Thanks, sir.
Thanks for having
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, great to be here.
Good deal. And I just wanted to kind of kick things off here. I gave everybody the website. Again, that's DEF2013.com, where people can kind of mine in and look at what you're trying to accomplish for the Defense Entrepreneurs Forum. And what I wanted to start off with, and Ben, we'll start off with you, kind of do a specific question for you as part A, and then part B, a general question I would like all the people on the board to kind of address. But specifically, Ben, how did you get to the point that here you are, just a standard issue, Navy JO, decided to get involved in the marketplace of ideas with Disruptive Thinkers, and that progressed you from there over to helping get together DEF 2013. If you could please talk a little bit about how that path developed for you to kind of step out of the shadows and put yourself in the market. And also the general question I'd like everybody on the board to address is, when you get through and you close up shop at DEF 2013, what are you really hoping to have as a big takeaway for both you personally, but also in the larger national security arena and the marketplace of ideas?
Well, thanks, Sal, for the opportunity to talk with you all today. My intellectual journey towards DEF really started about 12 years ago. I was at Northwestern as ROTC cadet and or midshipman, rather, and we got a new commanding officer named Captain Dan Moore. And in the process of our senior year leadership and ethics course, he kind of threw the book out and redid the course syllabus, bringing in a lot of what Vice Admiral Stockdale had taught him at the War College. But beyond that, we went off independent study to discuss the works of John Boyd, and Captain Moore was actually an accolade of Boyd back in the 80s, and so we went through all of his stuff. And from that moment on, I really kind of started thinking outside the box as to how the military could be an agent for change and how to actually get change through a bureaucracy. Well, that stayed latent for about 8 years while I was doing my flight training, then through my fleet tour, and then I got to San Diego as a instructor pilot at VMFAT 101 and met a guy who ended up being one of my best friends named Brian Ferguson. He and I were sitting in a bar one day, kind of just talking back and forth about some of the frustrations we had with the military bureaucracy, and he kind of had an interesting path. Before joining the military, he was briefing high-level officers at both the Defense Department and White House and was getting a lot of access as a 25, 26-year-old. But as soon as he put on the uniform with those ensign bars, all of a sudden he really had no more influence. And so we were trying to figure out what could we do to kind of push for change. And through our conversation, we kind of nailed down on the fact that, well, who are the people of our generation, those 25, 30-year-olds, in our world who have really made a big difference? And, you know, it was the entrepreneurs. It's those like Elon Musk and Mark Zuckerberg and other people who have formed multi-billion-dollar companies that have kind of shaped the way we view the world. And a lot of our peers had just come back from Afghanistan, and we're currently there in Iraq as well. And that environment forced them to be innovative and entrepreneurial. You know, they went to war not necessarily being trained for the war they were going to fight, and not because they didn't get the right training, it was because we just didn't know how to train them appropriately. And so those young people and, you know, officers and enlisted had to make things up on the fly to create an entire culture of change at a religious, societal, intellectual level, and really not necessarily fight a war, but kind of rebuild a society. And so we wanted to link those people up, those innovative junior officers and enlisted personnel, with civilian entrepreneurs, and that's where the Disruptive Thinkers was born. And it just started with five people in my living room one day. We were talking about a slew of books that we had read and kind of going back and forth. And as we tapped further into the San Diego entrepreneurial culture, we realized this was a big thing. And all of a sudden, you know, we had 30, 35 people coming to our events. I think now they have 60 at their San Diego event. And it soon branched out. And many of you may have read The Military Needs More Disruptive Thinkers, which is an article that we put up in a Small Wars Journal about a year and a half ago. Well, I'd also met Tony in San Diego, and he and I had been exchanging emails and ideas for probably 5 or 6 years since we were flight school mates back in Meridian, Mississippi. And both of us kind of had a similar vision, is that, you know, disruptive thinking has kind of taken off. There's this whole military innovation movement. And we were seeing on social media that things like Twitter and Facebook were having these very high-level conversations that were kind of transcending rank, transcending the officer-enlisted divide, and really generations. And I've always been a big fan of face-to-face interpersonal interaction. And having seen the impact of conferences like TED and TEDx and some other organizations I'm a part of, I really wanted to bring military entrepreneurs from across the DoD together into one space to really get kind of the fleshing out of ideas and true interaction, really a no-holds-barred discussion on where we should be going both tactically, strategically, and technologically, and get these smart people in the same room. And so that was the genesis of DEF, and we, you know, happened to get the University of Chicago on board with their faculty. And we really wanted to focus on both those veterans and active duty personnel who have actually executed entrepreneurial ventures, started their own companies, and hopefully take those lessons that they learned and give them to military entrepreneurs, those intrapreneurs who are in the military that want to affect change at a low level, but don't necessarily know how to do it. Create those networks, create those stakeholders from across the service that can, you know, lend support, but also really link them up with senior officers who can actually implement that change and want those good ideas coming from the deck plates. And where we see this going, you know, I'd love to see little Deaf X's growing up all around the country. And for those of you not familiar with TED is a movement I started about 20 years ago, but they now have one focused international conference. I think it's in March every year, but they have little satellite organizations called TEDx. So there's like a TEDx San Diego and a TEDx Asheville, North Carolina, and a TEDx DC. And these kind of are the incubators for these ideas. What if we had deaf exes around the country where in Army bases and Air Force bases and Navy bases, we had these entrepreneurial incubators for people to discuss ideas of things they've done on their ships and on their bases that have really made a difference. And obviously we want this national conference to continue to go forward, but we think that these small grassroots ad hoc loosely formed networks that continue to proliferate will create this culture of innovation that can't help but have a big change in the way the military does its business.
Tony.
Well, it's always tough to follow Ben. The question you posed was, what do we see next? And basically, when we look around our units and look around the DoD, there's often a negative attitude that persists where people expect poorly made products, websites that don't work or are very clunky. And I think our generation especially is keenly aware of those when they're set up against the backdrop of, you know, very beautifully designed websites in the civilian sector. And as Ben mentioned, you know, we've had lots of conversations about this and, you know, is this necessary? Is this something that we can improve on? And so I think our goal, aside from getting the dialogue started, is to actually have solutions that are built at very junior levels. So we're aware of the problems that we face as we access these systems, and we want to know, is there a way that we can improve these? And so by connecting innovators at whatever level they're at, we think there's a lot of potential to identify problems, suggested solutions, and then actually start building those. And it starts with you know, changing the way that we approach these. So can you procure solutions? Can you think through every possible problem that's going to exist as you're building the systems? And the answer is probably not. And one of the development methods that I think we'll come up in the conference, and something that will be very powerful, is taking an iterative development approach, a very nimble approach, and figuring out what's the minimum viable product. We have this idea that this type of service is needed. How can we take that and come up with, you know, and I know it's a buzzword, but that minimum viable product, and get it out to the users and start getting feedback immediately? How can we treat the service members as customers instead of employees and get feedback immediately about what's going to be the most useful for them? And then as we develop that, as we build these contracts to build the solutions, you know, can we build them in such a way that there is room for flexibility, and can we continue to improve them? So get out a first draft and then get feedback immediately, get back in there and fix the problems that come up. And I'm talking about systems like the Defense Travel System, DTS, which is probably a good thing, but it's been very clunky and difficult. It requires training. Marine Online, and you know, the list is quite long of these systems that people don't really like using but are required to use in order to get their job done. So our goal, we want to connect people. We want to identify the solutions and see, you know, how can we move forward. We're not just trying to throw spears, because it's a lot of hard work to develop these systems. We respect the people that are doing it, but we want to be a part of the solution. That's pretty much where we're heading right now.
Nate?
All right, thanks. Yeah, as Tony was saying, one of the large focuses that we have for this is getting solutions at the junior level and doing our best to actually put them into the services' hands. And one of my roles that I took on and was a pleasure when I joined the board was actually trying to bring on innovative senior leaders, folks who have been known to be innovative or to take on mentorship roles, so we can take those solutions from the junior level and have them work with a senior leader, actually implement them in their services. That is really the only way that we're going to institutionalize any of these innovative ideas or solutions. Another way is possibly by linking them up with the successful vets that Ben mentioned earlier. Those folks who have done their service, they've gotten out and they've started companies, they've done wonderful things. And so we brought on a lot of those folks as well to come out to Chicago in October and try and build these these networks, these relationships at the grassroots level, no uniform, no rank, everybody just, you know, bouncing around ideas, trying to get them implemented within the services. And the large reason why I joined was to, because through that, you can actually increase the belief in those of us who are active duty in uniform that you can make change happen from the inside. Yes, it may be slow sometimes. The bureaucracy may be extremely frustrating, but if we can create these changes from the inside, we have a better chance at actually keeping our smartest, most innovative people in service.
Jeff.
All right, thanks. It's actually pretty hard to go forth after you have three really smart people that have already pretty much described most of it. But there's a couple little things I want to add. I became involved in this because I like Tony. I went to work and was frustrated. Every time I turned on my computer, I was frustrated by many processes from different bases, especially whenever I would fly all around the world. And what we decided is, and decided to come together, is that the time is ripe for innovation. With the lack of funding, lack of resources, now's the time to get creative. So what we did is, and I think this is really important, is we set out from the beginning to have any rank. So it doesn't matter, you know, whether you're the lowest of the low, an E1, or you're an O10. If you have the best idea, we need to figure out the best and least difficult pathway to push those ideas forward, because quite honestly, lives are at stake, and also, you know, millions, sometimes billions of dollars are put in is at stake as well. So I think it's probably best to kind of sum up death and in a creative way that I think a lot of people would understand would be that the first day is kind of a TEDx. So we're talking about people that are inspiring and have already accomplished and had some of the successes, like Neda said. And then the second thing is the second day is like a Google startup weekend. So you bring your ideas while at the same time learning how to effectively sell your idea, whether that's slide decks, elevator speeches, also learning lingo and learning how to effectively communicate your idea in a very short period of time. Then working as a team to rapidly prototype and inviting a forum for feedback. And then third day is almost like a Shark Tank. So I think when you combine those, people have already seen those in various formats, and that's why I'm extremely excited to see what's going to take place on the 12th to the 14th of October.
Well, let me go back to you, Jeff, because I'm looking at your schedule here, and as you guys are talking, I'm thinking that a couple of shows ago we had a discussion with about the navies in the Civil War and how the South had to, they were fighting an asymmetric war. They were outgunned in many ways. They had to be more innovative. And as I, over my military career, you know, we always had these, or I developed sometimes, red teams to go in and look at what we were doing to see if there was a better way. I mean, we knew there was always a better way. The challenge was to find it. Are you getting pushback on this, or do you see senior people getting excited about the concepts of, I mean, we had an admiral on a couple of weeks ago talking about crowdsourcing through this RAD program. So do you see excitement at the upper levels and at the lower levels? I mean, are people, how is the feedback you're getting from the field on the effort you guys are making?
I would say, so definitely at the lower levels, people are excited because they feel like they have a voice. And the interesting thing is that at the lower levels, technology is moving so fast. So some of the younger troops and sailors and airmen and Marines that we have, they're actually the ones that are most familiar with some of the latest technology that actually could produce some of those breakthroughs, both downrange and at home, to become more efficient and innovative. At the senior level, I think it's, Nate would probably be able to describe this better, but I think it's more of an education campaign. We really haven't met much resistance where people are saying, you know, hey, this is stupid, knock it off. I think people are really excited that we're coming together and kind of coalescing as a team to be innovative in a very non-confrontational way. You know, we want to be part of the solution. Our goal is not to, you know, kind of bash heads and say how people have failed in the past.
Yeah, this is okay. Let me jump in real quick, if you don't mind.
Not at all.
Yeah, absolutely. So senior leaders, the ones that I've engaged with, are certainly extremely excited about it. They kind of view it, I don't know if you're familiar with the Commander's Initiatives groups or the Commander's Action groups, these small think tank type organizations that general officers, especially in the Army, I think the CRIC is probably one that fits within the Navy, They basically take some of their smart officers, put them in a small group, and have them either think long range, think about certain special projects, whatever it happens to be. And the senior leaders I've talked to about this have really kind of viewed this as kind of essentially outsourcing their SIG. We have guys like General Ben Hodges, General H.R. McMaster, two Army guys I'm very familiar with, both well known to be huge mentors within the Army as well as innovative officers. They're huge supporters. General Hodges is coming out to Chicago, and they're extremely excited to build up those networks and those relationships to try and help junior officers and junior enlisted try and enact some of those ideas they have.
Great. Tony?
Yes, as far as what the response has been, it's been pretty positive from what I've seen, and that hasn't been my focus in developing the conference. We basically all take a different piece of it, but everything that I've heard so far, people seem to be very excited about the possibilities that the conference offers.
And Ben, got any thoughts along these lines?
Yeah, I mean, at first we thought we were going to get, you know, a lot of people saying to us, you can't do this, you know, it's not something that's important to us. But I think the bureaucracy doesn't really know how to deal with innovators. In my experience, they almost want to let us see what we do. If we fail, they don't have to worry about it. If we succeed, they'll deal with us later. But in my current job with the CNO Rapid Innovation Cell, we've gotten to stand that organization up from basically two people to 15 and now iterating through another year. And there's been a lot of top-level advocacy and excitement about it. And I think DEF is just another manifestation of that. One thing I really think we bring value to in terms of the DEF proposition is that this is loosely and not officially organized by the military services themselves. It's junior officers inviting senior officers to come together in a conversation, and we feel so much passion and value for it. We're basically paying our own way to Chicago, which almost never happens for junior officers to come to a conference to. But we're organizing all on our own, and that excites the senior leaders because they see that we are passionate and we do want to put our money where our mouth is, literally, in trying to affect change. So I, you know, obviously want more senior leaders to come if they're interested, but I think once we prove our mettle, this first event, and we can showcase some of the cool stuff we've done and the interactions we've created, that'll just help build the case for the follow-on years and hopefully some further engagement and more change to be made.
I was curious.
Can I hop in one more?
Oh, sure. Go ahead.
Sorry. Yeah, I just wanted to say one thing about kind of the in-between. We've talked a lot about junior and senior, but we haven't talked about the mid-grade officers. And at least as far as my own network, I've gotten a lot of interesting feedback from the mid-grade officers, from major all the way to full-board colonel. And the interesting part is senior lieutenant colonel and colonel ranks, who most would view as kind of like the standard bearers of the institution. It's pretty interesting to hear from them, both their criticisms as well as their support towards this conference. They're a little less idealistic than the junior officers, a little less idealistic than the senior officers. And that actually makes it a really good kind of plumb line for us as we've been developing this, just kind of hearing their feedback. And plenty of them have been extremely supportive in the idea of trying to, outside of the military, but still being a part of the military, developing these type of innovations and ideas.
And I would encourage everybody, and y'all cover it a little bit on the website when you're talking about the background of it, but everybody should go, if you haven't already, go to DEF2013.com, Delta Echo Foxtrot 2013.com, and look over what they've done there, because I think one of the neat things is when people, and guilty as charged here, when I first saw DEF2013.com, I mean, it went, oh, great, we're going to see Lockheed Martin, Boeing, all those schmucks up there. But it's not. It's not what people are used to when they hear about some type of conference going on where you have your usual suspects up there. It's very clean. It's very open. And the TEDx, exactly right. I think if those who have the opportunity to be there, I think it really be neat to see iteration one, which they're hoping will be more coming down the road. So I really encourage everybody to go to the site as you're listening to the show, bounce around a bit, and I think it'll flesh out for you. This really is something different and is worth keeping an eye on. And I wanted to go ahead and pop a question over to Tony here, simply because I like to pick on Marines. But one thing that has come up recently, we're talking about, you know, senior mentors and leaders, and, you know, Tony, you and Ben and Nate and Jeff, you know, you're sticking your heads above the barricades here, and that's why it's kind of interesting to talk to you. And there are different gradients of mid-grade and junior officers when it comes to engaging in ideas. There are those that are the automatons that are just doing what they need to do, and they really don't want to think outside of their next duty section. There are those in the middle, but there is a large group on the fence who want to, but they don't really know if they should, how they can do that, or how they can engage without what they see as an impact on phase 2, 3, and 4 as they see as their career progression going on. And, you know, you can look at one of my favorite quotes, and, you know, one of our regulars here, which I'm really great to see, is going to be speaking with you, B.J. Armstrong. He started off his book with simply a great fit rep quote, and I think for those who are willing to stick their head above the parapet, good things can come from it. There's a little bit of luck, but there's also a little bit of the power of simply being audacious. But in his 1893 fit rep, Alfred Thayer Mahan's Raider said, quote, "It is not the business of naval officers to write books." So maybe in one of your fit reps there will be, it's not the purpose of an officer to do conferences on their own. But you also had SIMP. And I think it's great when people are trying to add to the friction. But you really do look for those senior leaders. Who are the senior mentors? And you usually do get support there from people until you have the wrong personality sitting on top of a rice bowl that you just knocked a few grains out of. At this stage, how do you help talk to that center mass of people who we all know that have great ideas, but when you say, hey, you should write something about this, or you should bring that topic up, they immediately pull into their shell. You know, and Tony, again, you know, going straight to you, in a peer mentoring kind of way, how can you talk to your other fellow Marine Corps captains who have great ideas, but they're never going to see the light of day? As a peer, how do you mentor your peers to come out of the shadows and add to the conversation?
Well, sir, you cut out briefly, but I think I got most of that. I think the first thing is, you know, we recognize that not every idea is great. And when you're writing a paper, when you're writing, you know, anything, you go through drafts. And so the first thing and most important thing is to get these ideas out. Let's talk about them. You hear it in the ready room. You hear people talking about things that are broken. And, you know, a lot of times people even have ideas about how they can fix them. Now, once you actually go into the problem, it's almost always more difficult, or something has changed from the time that the existing system was put into effect. So I think the first step is to go ahead, come up with an idea, and make it so that you don't have to – this doesn't have to be a 3-page, a 5-page paper in standard naval letter format. The first thing is, you know, draw it on a napkin, draw it on a sheet of paper, and then start getting peer feedback to see if this is something that other people like. And it starts there, and there's a – so – I guess that's lowering the barrier to entry to being someone that talks about new ideas, that talks about solutions. And that's one of the exciting things with some of the new technology that's out with, you know, whether it be online forums or Twitter. And that's what we're really hoping at the conference as well, and through our online idea forum, is to just get people to talk about them. The RAD, the idea scale RAD forum that Ben's a part of, that the Navy's been pushing, they've seen a huge amount of ideas that have come forward, and some of them suck. Some of them are not very good at all, and that's okay. You know, the first idea that gets posted up there might trigger somebody else to think of a way that they can do it a little bit better. So as far as a mentoring perspective and a piece of advice to people is to just join the conversation. Don't just complain unless you're willing to come forward with an idea for how we can make it better. And what's great about these different technologies is, you know, as a crowd, it's great for the person that's posting because it's such a low barrier to entry to get involved in the discussion. And it's great for the senior leadership because they don't have to sort through hundreds of letters, hundreds of ideas. Let the crowd do it. Let the crowd vote on what they think is interesting, what's a problem, and then go from there. And that's exactly what the Navy's been doing with the IdeaScale website. And it's really exciting to see that. And we want to be a part of the discussion with the actual, not just on specific ideas, but on the system of how services can evaluate those ideas. And that's where we hope we can be relevant.
And Jeff, over to you on the Air Force side of the house, what's a good way there to encourage your peers that have the good ideas that are hide in the shadows to step out and add some constructive ideas?
So jokingly, I try to make sure that they come to this DEF conference, and I make sure that they let them know that it's in civilian clothes, and just take off your name tag before you announce a good idea or what you think is a good idea. But in all seriousness, I think that having an online forum, like Tony was saying, it's a low barrier to entry. It allows people to post those ideas and not really be embarrassed. You know, you're not standing in front for the Air Force side like a wing commander in 06 where you're nervous and, you know, you have 20 slides and 10 packet slides and you better have all your data. Sometimes you just need people to say, hey, like every time I do this, I spend 10 extra minutes in my day. And if I multiply that by, you know, 5,900 people on a base, like that's a lot of time. Like that's one or two people's full year of employment that we're wasting just because of a stupid process that could be improved. So I think getting people to realize that upper leadership sometimes doesn't have any solutions and that we can provide them. And like I mentioned in earlier questions, as soon as we mention that or say that we're not trying to be adversarial, we're just trying to provide good ideas and do it in a very respectful and constructive way, a lot of people sign on board because their main fear is that they're somehow going to be punished in their career by proposing a good idea, which is, when you think about it and step back from it, it's actually kind of crazy.
Ben.
Well, I think in the Navy side, there is actually a grassroots effort to get those good ideas, and people are starting to realize that there is senior leadership buy-in. And again, I just have to reference the CNO Rapid Innovation Cell. This last year, we put a call out for application and got 65 guys from throughout the fleet to take part in our organization that, you know, takes ideas, gets some funding behind them from the CNO himself, and allows us to experiment with them so that we can have an effect on the fleet at large. And I think as this group grows and as our influence kind of permeates throughout the fleet and we start getting these cross-community conversations going, people realize that senior leaders do want to listen, and those commanders and captains are there who will support us if you have a good idea that, you know, can be backed up with data. And just also introducing them to the realm of the possible. One of the things we've been allowed to do is travel around the country to visit very innovative organizations, and happened to go to Silicon Valley a couple weeks ago. And a lot of the things that we saw are directly applicable to the projects we're engaging in, talking to places like Stanford Business School and the Hoover Institute and Facebook and Google and all these very innovative organizations. People start to see the Navy does care about this. They're interested in these ideas, especially with sequestration kind of taking us for a little ride here. We can come up with innovative solutions and take off-the-shelf technology and implement that. And junior officers and enlisted personnel have the ability to affect change. So from the Navy side, I think we're in a good glide path. There's obviously still a lot of work to do.
And Nate, I think this is a pretty neat question for you, coming from an Army background with all the budgetary stress the Army's going under as we wind down our wars. And I know that there's a kind of an internal civil war in the Army of the coin versus the anti-coin people. How is the culture there in the Army towards those that want to do what we've been talking about this afternoon?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'd have to say, you know, I don't know much about other than what I read about the coin, anti-coin debate. But I had the good luck to spend a couple of hours the past, you know, 2 or 3 weeks ago on the Army staff talking to some of the folks there. And I got to say, they're being extremely innovative with what they're trying to do. They've been given a pretty bad plate with this whole sequestration and everything, and what they're asked to do and how quickly they're asked to turn around products and ideas. And it's actually been really impressive. You know, as many of us would imagine, most people do not think the Department of the Army, Army staff, would be the most innovative organization in the world. So it was very heartening to go and speak to those guys and see what they're working on and just see, you know, what great work they're doing. And addressing your earlier question about getting those who are on the fence to come to a conference or to write or to be a part of this type of event, it really, what it comes down to me is example, and it's not the example of those who are on the phone today or who are on the board of DEF, but actually those folks who, through their own initiative and, as Ben said, with their own money, are coming out to the conference for nothing more than to put out a good idea or to meet other folks who are interested in similar issues and just want to do something better for their services and for their country. I'm really looking forward to the actual conference itself, not only to meet all these wonderful people, but to be able to see just how many people have shown up to do just that.
Eagle One? Eagle One, you there? All right, well, we seem to have a little bit of a technical problem here. He had to dial out. Now he dialed back in. I think we got him. Eagle One, yep.
Can you hear me now?
Ah, there you
Hello.
Go.
Yeah, sorry, Stack threw me off. I must have done something irritating to them. Yeah, I was asking why University of Chicago. Why? How did you guys end up there? And what are they bringing to the table in addition to giving you guys some rooms to play in?
Yeah, the big thing there is just networks. So when Tony and I were first creating this conference, we wanted to have it at a place where we knew that entrepreneurship was fostered. And he knew a guy, I knew a guy at University of Chicago. We reached out to one of our friends and put us in touch with the veterans organization there and went to the administration. They were more than happy to give us a room and a facility to use and also leverage the talents of their professors, both in the business school and in the public policy school, to really do breakout sessions and, you know, from a top five business school, get these really high-quality professors to talk to military folks about selling your idea, getting engaged with social media. How do you pitch an idea? How can you make influence at it from a low level? And, you know, hopefully continuing this on with other business schools in the future or other organizations that really want to foster innovation and interact more with the military. And I see another advantage in that Chicago really doesn't have much of a military presence. Obviously, the Navy trains up there north of Chicago, but for the most part, it's a city that's been untouched by the past 10 years of war. And I think we can start bridging that civil-military gap by introducing them to the fact that there are creative officers who want to engage in these type of discussions. And by going directly to a civilian organization, giving a little bit more different cachet than, you know, as you alluded to, Commander Sal, earlier, the Standard Defense Conference, where you have the big contractors throwing out money to, you know, wine and dine dollar signs as they see us walk through the halls. Well, this is completely different. The non-profit-seeking organization that just wants to have this great discussion, bring in some of their talent from the civilian world and combine it with the military folks and see what happens.
That's good. Anybody else want to chime in?
Yeah, this is Nate. I'd say, you know, Ben pretty much laid out why University of Chicago, and everything from the makeup of the board for the forum to why we're in Chicago, to a lot of the people who are coming, a lot of the general officers who are coming, all comes back to networks and relationships, and that's one of the large takeaways we're trying to develop with the forum. You know, I once Ben put out that article in Small Wars Journal a year and a half ago. You know, I was feeling similar things. I had recently written something on a separate blog with Pete Munson, who was in the Marines at the time and is going to be one of our speakers at the conference in October. And got some serious blowback from folks within my organization. And so I was definitely feeling what Ben was talking about, trying to, you know, get outside the box, think innovatively, trying to do things as a junior officer. And so we just started having a discussion over Twitter and email, and they just kind of blossomed from there, and that's how you actually got the makeup board as it is and going to Chicago. It's just merely through relationships.
Yeah, I think the whole – originally I saw Chicago, I was like, why Chicago? But the more I thought of it, it all touched right on it. It's really a great location because a lot of times if you're going to have a conference, you know, within, you know, a standard issue hour commute of D.C., you're going to get a lot of beggar weeds coming on there that are just showing up for a convenience factor. I think by having it in Chicago – there's a little bit of practical filtering, but I think it also opens up the intellectual space a little bit. So, yeah, good pick on Chicago, and you can always get a good beer or R12 there while you're at it. What I wanted to do is kind of go back to Ben's and Nate. I want you to kick off here on this question, then we'll go around the panel here. Early on in the show, Ben brought up a couple of of names here that got me thinking about a topic we've addressed here a few times. We had a show about a year and a half ago just talking about the intellectual education of leaders, where we had Vice Admiral Miller from the Naval Academy. We also had Victor Davis Hanson on, the officer, the author and philosopher, on, and just talking about what it takes to develop that mind, refine that mind of our leaders. Because when you look at a couple people that Ben mentioned, you had Stockdale. A lot of people know his background as a POW, as an officer, but he was very much a philosopher at heart. He wrote a lot about it, some really high-level philosophy, stuff our friend Lucian likes to dig around in. And he also brought up Boyd, definitely a rebel and an innovator, but they both represented different halves of the brain. I think you could effectively call Stockdale the liberal arts portion of the brain. Boyd, while an innovator and a rebel, was very much a technical guy, very much a mathematical engineering mind. But they both really helped to push the envelope, and you have to have people to push the envelope so that the technocrats can come behind them and fill that space with things that displace water and make shadows on the ramp, so to speak. But when you look at how we educate our officers, for instance, I was a ROTC guy, and I believe most of y'all were as well, had a little more leeway, but especially at the Naval Academy and other ones, there's a big emphasis on technical education, not so much on expanding the liberal arts portion of the brain. And when you look at how we bring in our officer accessions and then how our JPME is structured and how our war colleges are structured, in order to bring the type of participants that you want at a DEF 2013, they've got to show up at the table with a baseline of intellect and education, and for a lack of a better phrase, intellectual curiosity to do that. And again, starting with you, Nate, do you see where we have the right focus on our intellectual foundation for our leaders? Are there a couple of things you would like to see the military in general to do to help better build that intellectual foundation to produce those leaders that will let our military succeed into the future?
Yeah, absolutely. Those are some really great points. And I know the Army in particular, I can't speak for the other services, have been trying to balance and trying to work through those issues. I was at the Combined Arms Center, which is in Fort Leavenworth, which is the home of the intermediate level education, the mid-grade education, for a couple years prior to going to Harvard. And then just recently, until mid-August, I was at the Army War College taking the strategist course that Army strategists have to go through. And so there was a lot of discussion about senior leader education, but even more importantly, the education of mid-grade leaders so that they will be ready to take education to be senior leaders. And like I said, I just went through the strategist course. I was an armor officer, now an Army strategist. And so my bias definitely tends toward, you know, the strategy. And so there's large discussion in our senior leaders in the Army because of the way that they go through their careers. They go through their careers to be commanders, which is until you get up to like 3-4-star level is absolutely at the tactical level. You really only get strategy if you happen to take that, you know, 2-hour block in the intermediate level education or however long it is, or once they're senior lieutenant colonels or Fulbright colonels going to the Army War College. So they don't really get that strategic education unless they have some, you know, internal predilection to go looking for it until they're already, you know, 20-something years into the service. So my own personal bias is that we should be teaching things like strategy and social sciences much earlier. And you talked about the academies a little bit. I actually had four different West Point instructors and former West Point students in the strategies course I was at the War College. And three of them were on the social sciences and the non-number sciences. You know, one guy was he had majored in and was teaching political philosophy. Another guy was basic social sciences. And another guy, I think, was economics. So they're definitely kind of teaching the more social science aspects that you don't necessarily think of when you think about the technical education you get from West Point. And I was extremely impressed with their their knowledge, far, far and above mine when it comes to the philosophy and the social sciences and even strategy. What I would say is I think the good news is we're having long discussions about what kind of education and even career track that we need our senior leaders to have. What I'm interested in is actually to see the makeup of the folks that do come to the entrepreneurial forum. Because I know we definitely have the tech-focused guys who want to make technological solutions, process solutions to certain things, the everyday annoyances in the bureaucracy of the military, which we absolutely need. But I'm hoping, from my personal perspective and the folks I've tried to bring on board, that they actually bring that, you know, more conceptual, theoretical, intellectual bent to have a good discussion and make those relationships and maybe not get, a product coming out of the weekend that we can then, try and work into the services, but actually, continue their development and their relationships so that when they become senior leaders and when they influence senior leaders, they have that educational background.
Ben.
Yeah, this is Jeff. Go ahead.
Or Jeff.
Sorry.
Jeff works. No, go ahead. Jeff, we'll have Ben go after you.
No, I just want to say I was actually an Air Force Academy grad, and I totally agree with you. The fact that a technical education is awesome because it teaches you, engineering principles and how to apply step-by-step problem solving. And that works great in so many aspects. But at the same time, I think sometimes technical degrees tend to emphasize that complexity equals superiority. And I think that works in some cases. Sometimes you have to have complex instruments and complex machinery to be able to effectively, project power and win wars. But sometimes that complexity requires additional training, additional money, additional resources, additional manpower, when simplicity could have been empowered or could have been used in that situation. And so I think, my personal passion is user experience and simplicity and trying to make it great. And I just want to illustrate with a kind of a small example. As in the C-17 world and within AMC, Air Mobility Command, the guys in the Air Force who fly the heavy airplanes, they came out with a program that basically would have you fly a slightly different speed based on your weight, which was the absolute most efficient to save some money. But the computer program was written in a very Windows-esque type setup that you needed either the keypad open or you needed a touch, some type of, pen or pencil to be able to touch the screen to be able to use it. And it was complex and required a day of training just to try to figure it out. But the bottom line is that until leadership forced people to use it, no one wanted to use it because it was complex. And you think you kind of juxtapose that with my buddy's 2-year-old who uses an iPad. And she uses the iPad because it's simple and it's intuitive. And I think, just as we were talking about with technical solutions and complexity, like sometimes we just need to go for the simplest solution and also create an environment where that's appreciated and also accepted in what we're striving for. And I think up until recently, it hasn't been. And that's why in some of the conversations with Def, I think we're moving in the right direction.
Ben.
Well, this is a great question, something I'm incredibly passionate about. I think there's two aspects to discuss. One is the formal education route, and the second is more informal intellectual curiosity. But to kind of throw my own community under the bus, I think naval aviation does education very poorly. And that's primarily because of our career path. We don't have a lot of time to get a degree. And if we do, it's often a non-observed one-of-one fit rep, which obviously plays very poorly at the boards. This is actually a question asked at the Admiral's Board yesterday at the Tailhook Conference by someone at NTS right now who is obviously passionate about it and wanted to continue on with his education. He's in a position to do that, but there's not a lot of institutional support for that. One of the things I'd love to do is spend 2 or 3 years at a civilian institution getting a degree like Nate happened to do with the Army. And there are some wickets to do that in our career path, but it's not encouraged. And oftentimes the detailer would say, well, just get your degree online somewhere, get that check in the block. And that's really what we view it as. It's a check in the block on your fit rep that goes up on your board, and they see that you got it, whether it's University of Phoenix Online or Harvard Business School or Harvard Kennedy School. It doesn't matter to them as long as you have it. And I think that's a culture change we fundamentally have to change because the world is becoming ever more complex. 21st century requires agile leaders. One of the things that I got most out of going to ROTC at Northwestern was every day I was sitting down with people who were future doctors, future lawyers, future politicians, future engineers, everything under the sun, and I got this whirlwind introduction to all these different things that the world is going to be changing towards. And I think our strategic leaders, if we truly want to make them for the 21st century, we have to expose them to the things the 21st century is going to bring. And that was really the foundation of Disruptive Thinkers. It's all of our conferences or all of our seminars were for military personnel, but none of the topics were specific to military topics. They were all things that were shaping our world, like biomimicry or crowdsourcing or the elements of design and architecture, things that you wouldn't think you'd normally associate with military applications, but if you think about it, actually have indirect applications you can think about it and apply later on. And I'll point to two examples for the impact of this is General Mattis and Admiral Severitas. You know, Mattis was known as the warrior monk, and he was reputed to have at one point a library that numbered in the thousands of books. And even though he didn't have a prestigious degree, he went to, you know, to National Defense University for his master's degree, he was still intellectual fire horse because he took time out of his day to read and to understand the world around him in his natural curiosity. Admiral Stavridis, almost different in the sense that he got his PhD from Tufts, but still, throughout his career, constantly reading, constantly learning about new ideas, interacting, a polymath, spoke multiple languages. And really, when it came time for him to be the strategic leader at NATO, he inherently understood the cultural conditions there and could speak to them literally in their own languages. We don't make those leaders very well right now. We have to change our mindset from an industrial age widget mindset to one of the 21st century, where we're encouraging leaders, young leaders at young ages, to take on these challenging educational opportunities and incentivize them to do so.
And as Ben calls for the Renaissance man, we go to our Marine, Tony.
Like Ben, I'm coming from an aviation background, and it's typically not encouraged to deviate too far from the career track because you won't make it back to the fleet in time to hit certain career gates to get certain quals, and so it's typically not encouraged. Now, I will say the Marine Corps just recently, in the last couple of years, started the Commandant's Career Level Education Board. And now instead of having only people that are interested applying to programs at the Naval Postgraduate School at certain civilian institutions, now every single mover in the company grade ranks gets screened to go to these programs. Foreign Area Officer is one of the other programs. And what their intent is to no longer just have whoever happens to be interested. They're really trying to encourage people from all across the MOS spectrum to get into these programs so that they can get people out to education programs. I'm not entirely convinced that it's set up just right, and there's been a lot of resistance because people are actually being forced to go to these programs now and incur a commitment on the backside, which has not been very welcome, and so I think they're actually bleeding quite a bit of talent because of the programs. But I think the Marine Corps is sort of headed in the right direction with that. As far as intellectual curiosity and the different programs that we do have, the professional military education, I completed Expeditionary Warfare School, and I can remember being in some of the classes, and we'd have a discussion, and it wasn't necessarily is the Marine Corps the most effective force in history, and have, you know, do we have the best power projection, which I think really should have been the question is, are we effective? But it was, how are we the most, you know, powerful? And there was a sense of, you know, dishing out Kool-Aid for everybody to drink so that we could go and talk about how great the Marine Corps is and why we're awesome and, you know, preach this to our Marines. And so I think there is plenty of room to grow in that case as far as being able to ask the question why. From liberal arts, I went to Brown University for undergrad and studied neuroscience, so I got a little bit of both the technical training as well as the liberal arts degree, and that's one of the things that I've noticed is that I don't think we're always asking why, or why does this system exist the way it does, and I realize that there's a time and place for that, but certainly in our schools, we should be asking that, and when we're back in garrison, it's certainly a safe environment to ask, is this the best way to accomplish this? And so I think with the forum, with some of the other initiatives that the Marine Corps is pushing out, I think we are moving in the right direction.
Well, that leads into a question I have based on your guys' speaker lists. I'm impressed by the fact that you you've set up point counterpoint. I mean, Ben, you start off with your disruptive thinking, but then you immediately throw a person in who's been critical of your disruptive thinking as far as it goes to the military. And as I go through the list, and I see BJ's on there for the historical view, and you've got Lucian and a lot of other folks. Who set this up? I mean, this is just brilliant. I love the fact that it's too easy at a lot of conferences to get on the bandwagon. You guys have built in sort of the guy whispering in the ear, you know, all glorious fleeting. So this is wonderful. Who set this up?
Again, it comes back to networks. It's the people that I've interacted with, Tony's interacted with, Nate's interacted with, and Jeff's interacted with over the past year and a half that we think would bring a valuable voice to the conversation. And again, we don't want to be the talking point conference. We want to present multiple viewpoints. And the guy you referenced, you know, Army Major Crispin Burke, he's been one of my most vociferous adversaries when it comes to disruptive thinking. But I love that because in a safe environment that we're providing at DEF, we need that back and forth. And, you know, people want to engage in this. They want to have that conversation at a high intellectual level. And as they say with conversations, even if two people are coming at a view from diametrically opposite points, when they leave, one, they're going to learn something from it. They're going to grow from that conversation. And that's something I think we fear to have. Most like I go to the USNI conferences in FCA, and I love them, but all the panels with the admirals, it's the same thing. You almost never leave saying, well, Admiral X disagreed with Admiral Y. That was interesting. Let's have a sort of true debate about what they were talking about. It's all the talking points they have, and you know I understand the political requirements there, but sometimes it's good to just get your ideas out there and throw them into the marketplace of ideas and see what happens.
Yeah, I think that's great. I love it. So, Jeff, what do you see on here as the point counterpoint to some of the thoughts you have, or is it the historical view, or do you take some other position here that you see differently from the rest of the people we're talking to?
Well, I'm not disagreeing with Ben because I'm friends with him, but I think it's extremely important to be able to throw those ideas out in the marketplace and see what sticks. There's too many ideas when you go to conferences or you know stand in front of a and hear some type of all call where a commander you know pontificates and says what he's says what his new project or new saying or new catchphrase is. People think that just to disagree with it is automatically being insubordinate. But I think we need that debate. And I think because we've had a lack of that debate is part of the reason that we're in the situation where we are. And just a small example is, you know, in a squadron at the end of the year, there's tons of funding or tons of money left in previous years. And so instead of saying, you know what, we've bought everything we need to buy, but we still have $100,000 left, instead you have, you know, you buy plasma or LED TVs where Fox News is talking to MSNBC, you know, in your hallway. And it's because no one really wants to stand up and say, hey, I don't think that's a good idea. But I think part of learning and learning how to be effective is how to dissent in a very respectful way. And, you know, your idea might not always be heard, but at the very least, you know that there's a forum to speak it. And, you know, hopefully that's the beginning, but I really hope that that's DEF isn't where it stops. I hope that we create an environment where it's more open to discuss some of these ideas because as resources become more constrained, people will have to make those tough decisions and leaders just going to need that support behind it. I think that support only comes with a very robust discussion before a decision's made.
Yeah, and Nate, I noticed that that on the you know in the following days you guys set up that same point counterpoint. Somebody comes with an idea and then you guys are going to critique it. As I guess you just say the Shark Tank sort of review. Is that, I mean, now I love the way you set this thing up. Was that the intention? Was to keep everybody moving forward with good ideas and showing them how to sell? Obviously to sell the good ideas, but I mean that's a big asset for someone in any part of the military to be able to present an idea. Knowing that they may catch flak for it, but having the strength to stand up for it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's not just that. It's to make sure we keep ourselves kind of intellectually honest. You know, a lot of my more senior mentors have said, you know, they were worried at the beginning that it was going to be all, you know, starry-eyed, energetic, optimistic young enlisted and officers kind of coming up with great ideas but not having either any power to make it happen or any idea of how to make it happen. And so that's one of the reasons we deliberately looked at trying to bring in senior leaders and bring in mid-grade officers who could come and attend and actually, you know, I guess balance out that possible optimism.
It's good to have Tony, as Jeff said, I think, I mean, as a retired 06, I've seen plenty of times when I've given something I thought was a great message and watch all the heads in front of me nod approvingly, realizing only they're nodding because they think the eagle has spoken, but when really the eagle's out there saying, here's a thought, would you guys critique this for me? Because I'm not sure if this is really a good idea. Do you see that as a valuable thing that can come out of this? People learning to kind of deal with it, learn to give feedback to their bosses?
Absolutely.
Yes, sir.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yes, sir. I think it's incredibly valuable, and I think that's one of the things that could really be improved in the armed service. It's very difficult because you want to perform well. You want to get promoted. You want to continue to be relevant to your community and to your service. But we see it all the time where you hear this phrase, fly what you can, log what you need. And so there's dishonesty. We talk about, you know, values when we go through training. Everybody comes out of officer candidate school from the basic school, starry-eyed, you know, ready to take the hill and with the strongest moral compass. And then we get out to the fleet and we run into these real issues where, you know, we're required to have so many flight hours in order for our commander to be successful. So our OPSO, you know, may put pressure on the individual pilots, and, you know, there may be pressure. I remember one specific instance when we had to get rid of the bombs that we had in inventory. You know, at the end of the year, we needed to get rid of them. And so it actually had a negative impact on our training. As a schedule writer, I was required to schedule people for events that weren't really that helpful. And so I think we need to foster an environment where people can fail. Now, of course, it's very difficult to explain to people and very difficult, but you need honest feedback to get back up to the commander. So the 06 needs to hear from the squadron commander, sir, that's a bad idea. We shouldn't do this. We need to push back. We need to put those back in inventory. You know, I know it's difficult, but it's going to negatively impact training. We need, you know, maybe there's an accounting solution to doing this, but you're going to negatively impact our readiness by making that decision. But what often happens is it's much easier to just go with the original order, you know, push it down. And so everybody smiles and says, yes, we can do it. We've got a can-do attitude, which is, you know, one of the best things about the Marine Corps, and one of the worst things is our pride in doing more with less. But I think being able to fail or being able to give critical feedback to our senior leaders, and I'm not saying that doesn't happen now, but I think we could do it more, and I think that's incredibly important. When we're getting ready for deployment, being able to tell the Admiral, you know, we can't get these check marks done, and furthermore, they're not important. The reason we don't do it is because we don't have the support, and the requirements need to change. You know, that's why we're not doing it. And so we need more people that are willing to be honest and push that feedback up to their leaders.
Yeah, and I just want to add what Tony said. I think what he said was really spot on. But I think also having leaders that are approachable, that can take that feedback, and especially when it's meant in an honest and helpful way from a junior leader. Because whenever they are approachable, that definitely cuts down on the amount of cynicism. And, you know, I think all of us know that there's certain forums out there, especially like on the air crew side, where people just post everything that they hate about the Air Force or you know, I know there's one for the Navy as well. But instead of, you know, posting it honestly on a forum, I mean, I think our goal should be to just be able to honestly and candidly, you know, tell and have some method to say, hey, that idea is stupid without taking 2 years waiting 2 years until that next commander leaves.
Yeah, I can tell you as an 06, I appreciate it when I always encourage, you know, I get everybody in the room and say, you know, the youngest sailor has got just as many good ideas as I have. But, you know, it's nice when somebody comes up and stops you from doing something really stupid. I don't care what rank you are. And when I was a young ensign, I had a chief help me do that. You know, hey, sir, you shouldn't do that. That's not the right thing. But, yeah, so this is good. I'm glad of this. And we've got to wrap this thing up. I want to thank you all for being here. And, you know, this could have gone on for several hours and probably should have. But do you have any of you all have last thoughts before we wrap this thing up?
Yeah, first of all, just thanks for having us on, but both to Sal and Eagle One. Love to have you guys come out to DEF, and Sal, if you guys want to do a show live from the DEF floor on the 14th or 13th, love to have you there.
Well, that will have me looking at the calendar, and I just want to encourage everybody that's listening here, The our guest today has
been.
Oh,
you have a daughter who lives in Chicago.
Hey, three room and board, you can't beat it. Our guest has been Lieutenant
Along
Jim
with that,
Colton.
If we can.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, real quick, I just want to give one last plug for the website. You had mentioned def2013.com,
yep.
And then our Facebook page, which has a pretty robust discussion going on daily, which is facebook.com/defenseentrepreneurs.
And I wish y'all best. A lot of good stuff going on here. And Ben, Anthony, Nate, Jeff, thank you very much for coming on this afternoon. Y'all done some good here, and I wish you the best of luck going forward.
Yeah, thanks,
guys.
Looks like a
brilliant.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Looks like a brilliant program. Have fun with it.
And thank you very much,
definitely.
Everybody who. Those who are joined us live can't hear us, but those on the archive absolutely can. And we look forward to seeing you again next week for another edition of Midwraps. Cheers.
What you doing?
Ran out of space on my phone, so I'm deleting some stuff. Bye, singing dog. Bye, goal.
I pronounce you.
Bye, wedding ceremony.
Stop. At Metro PCS, you get 2 free phones with twice as much memory.
Really?
Don't say bye to your memories. Switch to Metro PCS and get 2 free LG K20 Plus phones with 32 gigs when you switch 2 lines. Metro PCS. Wireless. Figure it out.
Coverage not available in some areas. Sales tax not included in phone price. Excludes numbers on the T-Mobile network. See store for details and terms and conditions.
What you doing?
Ran out of space on my phone, so I'm deleting some stuff. Bye, singing dog. Bye, goal.
I pronounce you.
Bye, wedding ceremony.
Stop. At Metro PCS, you get 2 free phones with twice as much memory.
Really?
Don't say bye to your memories. Switch to Metro PCS and get 2 free LG K20 Plus phones with 32 gigs when you switch 2 lines. Metro PCS. Wireless. Figure it out.
Coverage not available in some areas. Sales tax not included in phone price. Excludes numbers on the T-Mobile network. See store for details and terms and conditions.